what I hear next, I mean, nothing could prepare me for that except for 7 years of Spanish. When I hear fuego, 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 fuego.
And then the most amazing thing happened. I went into another dimension.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Henkin.
This week on the podcast, So This Is How I Die. Two stories about brushes with death. And spoiler alert, they don't die.
No, they both live. And okay, so our first story is from Paul Newsom, who's a photographer. He's a father. He's a husband. At the show, I got to meet his wife. She is, I mean, just delightful. And they have been together since, well, they were middle school sweethearts. They haven't been together since middle school, I don't think. But anyway, they're just delightful family. So, yeah, this is Paul's story.
Of not dying.
Of not dying on a winter day in Baltimore not so long ago. Please take a listen.
So the day was January 14th, 2019. It was a particularly cold day, so cold, in fact, that school had been canceled that day due to severe ice. It was too icy to do anything. That morning, coincidentally, I was moving some friends in who lived above us, me and another friend. We'll call him Carde. We were moving them into their apartment. And that morning, we are taking things back and forth. And I see the most curious sight on the other side of the block, just down the street. So there's my apartment on the corner, and attached to my apartment is a big apartment building. On the and at this apartment building, there's a lift. And on the lift is two Hispanic men with a torch. And they are torching the roof, like the gutter part, like five stories up, just like. And I'm just like, that's the most interesting way to melt an icicle. Or like, I just thought you could knock it off. Like, I don't know what's happening here. So I'm just watching. I'm sure somebody's like, hey, can you help me lift this? And I'm just like staring. Like, I don't. Like, what is going on right now? And. What I hear next, I mean, nothing could prepare me for that except for 7 years of Spanish. When I hear fuego, 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 and I'm like, if you don't, that means fire. Just tuck that one away. So I'm like, crap. It is an icy day. School was canceled. The apartment building that I talked about earlier is a transitional house for women in recovery, women and children. So on this particular day, this building was at max occupancy. All the women were there. All the children were there. So I immediately, somehow, my kitten's in my arms. I don't know. And I'm like, wow, whatever. And I just toss him to somebody, and then I'm like, gotta go. I know what he just said, and they're like, and even if you didn't understand Spanish, you could see the terror in their face and the way they're like jetting down the lift to get down to the ground floor. And I kind of blanked out on what they were doing. I was just darting into the building, like banged on the door. Someone came, and I say, like, the building's on fire. We got to get out. Like, get the kids, get the coat. Like, I was watching the people, and they were torching the roof. I don't understand. Like, it doesn't – I know that part doesn't make sense, but just, like, trust me. Like, we got to go. We got to get get your family out of here ASAP, and I got ways to go. So in this building, in this transitional house, it would be a room. Like, it was dorm style, kind of. So it was a main door and then three doors behind those doors. So – to get into one door, then I had to clear out the other ones. The first floor was good, so now I'm headed up to the second floor. Second floor is someone got through that door, but now I'm banging on the door. No one's answering. I kick that door down. I'm like, is anyone in here? the I hear I'm in here. Who's that? Who's this? And I'm like, we gotta go. It's a fire. And she's like, I'm in the bathroom. I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you. Like, bro, you got to go. You gotta get out of here. And so she is like, okay. I mean, I just give me a second. I'm like, I don't think you have that. Like, we gotta go. And so she goes, and I guess I stepped out the room. She gets on puts on some clothes, and I guess, and grabs her kid, and they go. Then I'm headed up to the third floor. In the third floor, we bang, bang, bang. No one answers. Kick that first door in. Now I'm banging on the second door. Inside these doors, the music was blasting. And I'm like, bang, bang, bang. Then a teenager opens the door. And I knew there was a mom, and there were like five kids, like a couple young ones and teenagers. And one of the teenagers opened the door, and he's like, yo, what? Like, duh, like, what are you doing, you know? And I'm like, yo, like, it's a fire, but we gotta go. Like, what are you trying to do, right? Like, we're not about to fight right here, you know? It's like, this is the rescue mission. This isn't like, what are we doing here? So I'm just like, all right. And then I had to step back, like, all right, it's power. It's kind of going to your head, like, you're kicking doors down. Like, you know, like, slow down. Reassess this. You're just a normal guy, you know, telling this kid to get out of his house because there's a fire. You're like, he doesn't know what's going on. So I run back to the story. Like, look, man, I saw these guys. They were torching the roof. The roof caught fire. They were yelling fire in Spanish. I understood it. And they were like, so now I'm up here. I got everybody out your neck. Like, y'all got to get the kids and y'all got to go. He's like, oh, all right. And all this over blasting music. So, clear them out. They were the only ones on that floor. Go to the fourth floor. There's a mom up there. She's like, I'm like, is there anybody else upstairs on the fifth floor? And she was like, I really don't, really can't tell you. And so they hustle down. So, this next part. So, I'm running to the fifth floor, and I see the most curious thing. It's a fire extinguisher. And I'm like, my legs are jelly, by the way. They are all kicking, running, and jelly. But I'm like, that extinguisher looks helpful. It's a fire. But I really can't carry another thing. Like, I can barely get myself up these steps. Like, it's only like one flight left to go. And then I'm like, focus. Like, focus, fire, people, burn, death, dying. You know, like, it's all like, so I dart up the steps. And leave the fire extinguisher. And then I get to the fifth floor, and it's like wavy smoke, like thick, foggy smoke. And I think for a second I was like, ooh, it's cinematic or something. I don't know. But you know, I'm scanning the room. I see boxes in the corner. I'm like, good, no people. Like a huge room, like bigger than this room. Like huge room. No dividing walls. Like it was just a humongous room, but full of smoke. Boxes in the corner. I don't know what that was. And then I'm like looking around, scanning the room, see up in the ceiling like a hole, an orange hole with like flames coming down. And I was like, huh, I think I can put that out. I just like cleared the building. Like I'm pretty sure I can like just like icing like cherry on top. Like I can just, you know, deliver it to the fireman, a whole solved situation. You know? Like, yeah, like, we did this. But, So I run back down the steps, grab the fire extinguisher, never used one before in my life, test it out. I'm like, okay, all right, that's how. So, stick it up in the hole in the ceiling, and I'll just let it rip. About that, that was a horrible idea. Upon telling the story, I researched it, and apparently it's something called like upwind and downwind, and I was downwind, and the fire goes downwind, and I shot it up. So what happened was everything came down. And I'm like looking with my eyes looking up as I'm spraying into it didn't click to me that it's not this hole that's on fire; it's the entire attic that's on fire. Like, for some reason, that didn't click. But I was in the mood. I was adrenaline pumping or whatever. And so then down comes, like, the fire extinguisher stuff first, then just black smoke. Then it's just pluming. And from what I can see, all I see is black smoke. And then the thought, I wish I could have had a better thought, but the thought was, so this is how I die. Like, of all the ways. And then I just hope, like, someone will tell my story well and won't, but you will never hear, like, he probably had an idea that he got distracted. You know, they'll never say that. They said he was a heroic man and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I was sitting there and smoke. I couldn't, like, it was a huge room, so I stepped this way. I could be further into the room, step that way. The door's right there. Like, I know the door. I just walked through it. It's, like, 2 feet away. But I don't know which way to go, like, forward, back, left, or right. So I'm just like, dang. And then, so like, my arms are just flailing, like, but I'm not moving because I don't want to get further away from the door. And then I hear an angel, or sounded like an angel, or sounded like my friend. Hey, yo, Paul, where you at? Where you at? And I was like, hey, I'm here. And he's like, so then he just reaches in and snatches me out so hard. My arm is still remembers that. And he snatched me out so hard. He's like, you good, dog? You good? And I don't remember if I was trying to talk or explain or, well, I don't know. But we were just like, we just hustled out of there. And I'm coughing. My eyes are burning. We're choking on the smoke inhalation or whatever. And then as we're exiting the building, the fireman is coming in the building. And he's like, is anybody else in the building? And I look at him. I puff my chest up, and I'm like, nah, we got everybody out. Thank you all. Have a good night.
I love this story. I love how aware he is of his own desire to be a hero and his own silliness at trying to be a hero. And
yeah, but it was so interesting because I really related to this in Paul, especially because it's clear that he's a person who for whom comedy and humor is a way that he navigates the world. He is just a funny person. His delivery was hilarious. But he had brought his friend, the friend who rescued him at the end, to the show, and the friend didn't know that he was going to share that part of the story. And that friend, you could tell, had a really different reaction to hearing the story.
Wow.
Like, that it was a brush with death for sure, especially for Paul. So that was interesting to observe. But I was so grateful that he shared his story at that show at Creative Alliance.
All right. We'll be back in a minute with more stories. Okay, so this next story is shared by Bruce McKenzie, who is a shipwright, and he actually, for Baltimore listeners, worked on the Constellation here in Baltimore for many years. So this story comes from his teenage years, and it's a true yarn. So in Bruce's story, you're going to hear some crowd noise. That is the sound of people drinking at a brewery and having a great time. Just listen. I think you're going to love it.
March 20th is considered the first day of spring in most of the country, except in Maine. That doesn't happen until about the end of May, maybe June. So on that date in 1969, we're talking way back, I was 17 years old, a junior in high school, captain of my gymnastics team. And at that same time, a very powerful northeast gale came in to Maine and hit the coast. We call them nor'easters. I was always fascinated with storms, and especially at sea. So that night, I got a hold of three of my friends, Marty, my best friend, and two friends, Cindy and Katie. Katie I was very interested in because I wanted her to be my girlfriend. So we decided, hey, let's go to my favorite spot, which was a place called Smuggler's Cove in Cape Elizabeth, Maine, just down from Portland Headlight, which is that famous lighthouse you see on every calendar about lighthouses. So just down there from there, about 2 miles, is Smuggler's Cove, perfectly named because it's dark, has these tall cliffs and a winding rocky beach to the left of it, to the north of it. So we got there. The scene was almost indescribable. We had 20 to 25-foot waves coming in sets, crashing against the cliffs, crashing against the beach. It was kind of like the perfect storm, if anybody's seen that film. It was majestic. And we were standing on top of those cliffs, which were about 30 to 40 feet high, in a safe place. And we were getting stung by the seas that was blowing in. The wind was blowing 40 to 60 knots, at least gusts of 60 knots. And for some reason, I decided I'm going to go down a little bit lower on this cliff, where there was a nice flat spot you could stand, because I'd been there several times before. I got down there, and I turned around to look up at Katie, and she had this horrified look on her face, like frozen. And I turned around to face a wall of water. Now, this is winter in Maine. The water temperature is anywhere between 38 and 42 degrees. I got washed off the cliff. I hit the water, and I had a very heavy coat on because it was cold and we were prepared for the weather. And it was made out of wool that immediately filled with water, and I was dragged down with a riptide and undercurrent. And then the most amazing thing happened. I went into another dimension. It's a mystery still to this day. What happened next? All of a sudden, I was in a room of color everywhere around me, just vibrant color, swirling. And then eventually it turned into a whirlpool of color, huge whirlpool. And I'm floating down this whirlpool of color, and I'm warm. And I am also at peace. And I'm fascinated by what's going on. I'm watching in these ever-concentric circles circling down, and I notice down at the bottom a black speck. And that black speck gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it absorbs me. And then the spiral continues, but it's all black, and the colored spiral is fading away. And I kind of freak out. And I reach back for the colors to bring them back. Exactly at that moment, I came back to the dimension I had left. I found myself on the bottom of the sea. I must have hit something that woke me up, whether it was a rock, whether it was a log, whatever, I don't know. So I find myself on the bottom of the sea. I am coatless at this point. I shove off on the bottom because I see crashing waves up above me. And I get up to the top, and I throw up about a gallon of water. And I take the biggest breath I've ever taken. And then I look around me, and I start to panic because there is no sight of land. I'm in crashing waves all over me. And then an image of my father comes into my head. Now, Dad had been with Patton in World War II. So he saw some pretty unbelievable stuff. And he taught us all, never panic. So instantly, that came to me, and I said, whew, okay, where am I? What am I doing? Okay, I'm beyond cold. I don't feel the cold anymore, but I only know that I have to survive. So I watched the pattern of the waves, and I noticed that the bigger ones are going in a particular direction. So I start to swim that way, and I use the waves and swimming, and I take forever. I go I'm completely exhausted. I feel like I've been swimming for hours. And I say, I'm done. I don't have anything left. I could not raise my arms anymore. I surrendered to the sea. Very calmly, too, I remember. And as soon as my head got below the water, my feet touched the ground. All of a sudden, I felt like Superman. I got so much energy, and I just swam as hard as I could, and I encountered the rocks up ahead of me, which were low rocks, apparently down to the left of the cliff. And each time I tried to get onto the rocks, the waves would tear me off. So it took 3 or 4 or 5 times to get to this point. Well, one of the waves took me and put me on top of the rock. I tumbled over, using the last strength I had, onto the rocky beach. And I lay there, not knowing who I was, what I was, where I came from. I felt like I'd been taken out of the primordial ooze. I just existed, and I had no idea why. All of a sudden, the world lights up. And I look above me, and I see what looks like the moon. And I go, moon? What does that mean, moon? I was completely confused. And then a voice came over the very loud voice, are you alive? And I'm like, what does that mean? Alive, am I alive? So I was thinking these vague thoughts, like, what the hell is going on? And all of a sudden, I get picked up by 2 men who had come down the backside of the cliff, and they were from the Cape Rescue Squad. They hauled me up the cliff about 2/3 of the way up, and my friend Marty, who was an all-state linebacker, big guy, 185, 90 pounds, comes and grabs them from and puts me over his shoulder, and all I remember is seeing this light, flashing lights in an ambulance. They put me in the ambulance, and for some reason, things were starting to come back to me, and I went, oh, I had never been in an ambulance before. And the lights are flashing, and I said to myself, you guys have a horn? And they said, yeah. And I went, put it on. So that's the last thing I remember before I passed out and got to the hospital. I get to the hospital. They have a room waiting for me, and in it they shove me with wool blankets and multitudes of hot water bottles, layer upon layer upon layer, to bring my temperature back. Now, my temperature got down to 85 degrees. Death, apparently, or your body stops functioning at 82. So that was at the hospital, so I don't know what my temperature was when I got to the beach. I was very close. But anyway, I warmed up. My parents came. I was there for several hours. Finally got out at somewhere around 4 o'clock in the morning. I went to school the next day. I still don't know why. I still go back to that and think, what were you thinking? Anyway, they gave me an assembly. The whole class of the South Portland High School showed up, all the faculty, and they were honored me for surviving. But I wanted to end this with a couple of things. One of the things I've learned in life is don't do stupid shit. Teach your kids to swim, and teach yourself to swim if you don't know. And thank you very much.
with Bruce, you would think something like this would be kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. For most of us, it's a never-in-a-lifetime
right.
thing. But he told me after the show that this is one of only 10 near-death experiences he's had. And I don't know. What does that say about him? Is he a thrill seeker? I have no idea.
Well, he certainly is able to outfox the, you know,
yeah. And
the
I
ultimate
think it's,
ending.
It's always wonderful when people's near-death experiences involve a glimpse of death that is not like a horrible, terrible, burning hell, but rather something very peaceful and colorful and all of that. So I want to thank Bruce for reassuring all of us with his near-death experience.
What do you see death as something that's a positive?
No, not positive, but not, I don't think I'm going to hell.
Yeah. Do you think there is a hell?
No.
Oh my God, that would be amazing if I
knew you all these years. No,
like,
I actually just don't really think about,
hell,
I don't think about what's going to happen after.
Really?
No.
Huh.
I'm very here-centered.
Well, la-di-da. I think about it, but I think about it in positive terms. I'm like, it's got to be better than this.
Great.
It's just got to be better than whatever the F is going on.
Okay, we're
going
to leave you with that. Thanks a lot for listening, y'all. We'll be back soon with more stories from the Stoop. In the meantime, you can visit stoopstorytelling.com to learn about our shows and workshops and listen to old stories. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. Take care.